Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Ask me how I knew my true love was true.
Boy, howdy, folks. I hate to interrupt Tony Williams, the great lead singer of the Platters, but I guess I have to because we got to get back to work here. What a great song. And somebody who is joining us right now, I know, remembers that song and I probably appreciates it the same as I do. His name is Ken Dalecki. He's an old friend of mine and yours as well, folks. He's a longtime member of our Brain Trust. He's deputy managing editor at Kiplinger Editor, sitting in for Joan Pry today. Ken, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you.
You remember that song, I'm sure.
I sure do.
Wasn't that a great song?
It is.
Tony Williams, what a great singer he was in the Platters. They were outstanding. Ken, thanks for joining us. Thanks for filling in for Joan this week. We appreciate it very much. And
you're welcome.
You know, Ken, one of the things I was going to tell you, I bet this is something you don't remember. On this day, because I know you probably weren't around this at this time, on this day in 1620, the Mayflower left Plymouth, England on the way to the New World.
You're right. That? I wasn't around for that. That's true. And I didn't know that.
And on this day in 16...
It was in the hurricane season they left, huh?
That's right. And only 10 years later, 1630, the village of Shawmut changed its name. It was already established on the site where Boston now is, and they changed their name to Boston.
Don't
1630. How about that?
That's amazing.
On this day in history. You know, you can't go through
called,
life without...
It was called Shawmut?
Shawmut. S-H-A-W-M-U-T.
So the Democrats would have had their, or the Republicans, the Democrats would have had their convention in Shawmut.
Yeah, well, they actually did, except that now it's called something else. But you know, Ken, you just can't go through life without knowing some of these little known and less cared for facts, right?
Okay.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
All right.
Let's move over and talk about the lead story on page one, Ken, which is whether significant tax changes are coming. Tell us what's going on with the tax code.
Yes, well, we led the Kiplinger letter this week with a story about the analysis what we think is going to be a significant change in our tax system, which is going to be forced on us by the alternative minimum tax,
mm-hmm.
which is a tax designed to make sure that the rich paid at least some taxes, that they couldn't escape all the taxes by taking advantage of the various loopholes in the tax code. The problem is that when the ATM was AMT rather was enacted, it was not indexed. So more and more people, because of inflation, are being caught up in that tax. And by 2010, there'll be an explosion in the number of people who get hit by this taxes.
You know,
and, going to force the politicians to do something about it because, taxpayers aren't going to stand for it.
Well, I hope it forces them to do it, and I hope they do something sooner rather than later. But this tax reminds me of the death tax, the estate tax. Mm-hmm. It's like innocent people who get hooked on prescription drugs. You know what I mean? They didn't intend it to be that way, but it just happened. And,
well,
you know, the death tax, as you know, happened as a funding mechanism to help pay for the Spanish-American War, which is over, as we all know, and which we won. But here it is almost 100 years later, and we're still having to pay that death tax, at least notwithstanding some of the recent changes that have adjusted that a little bit. But then you've got this alternative minimum tax, which was created in what was it, late 60s, I think, 69, to offset some of the loopholes that rich, very rich people were able to take advantage of.
Right.
Well, Ken, we don't have those loopholes anymore. They've been gone for, about 18 years or so, but yet we still have the tax. And that, now you see my point about this being a prescription drug that they've gotten hooked on. If they make this change now, they've been insidiously collecting this money from folks over all these years. They've spent the money. They found a place to put the money somewhere. And now if we take it away from them, they don't know what they're going to do.
Well, that's right. That's the problem. Where do you come up with the alternative revenue?
Right.
And how they fix that will depend, of course, a good deal on who's in the White House, and of course the timing as well. I mean, we don't really know whether they're going to bite the bullet and do this in the next couple of years, or whether they'll make some perhaps minor changes and kick the can down the road, which is quite typical here, as you know. There are different ways of going about this, and what we see in the bottom line is that they'll probably wind up with a patchwork of changes, with perhaps fewer brackets and deductions, and streamlining tax breaks for things like education, for example. There are proposals out there to have sweeping changes, as you know, a flat tax, a national sales tax. But those are really, really tough to do because, for one thing, there are tremendous transitional costs to go from what we have now to that kind of a system. And the tax rate would have to be so high if you had a flat tax that also
right.
may become politically untenable. You know, one of the greatest, you're talking a little bit about history there, not going back as far as the Mayflower, but I was here when Ronald Reagan got through what was, I think, one of the most revolutionary changes in our tax system, and it got very little attention when it happened, and that was the indexing of the tax rates.
Mm-hmm.
That was a tremendous change. What that meant was that people weren't constantly being kicked into higher tax brackets, and every few years Congress would come around and be very generous and give everyone a tax break. Well, they weren't giving anyone a tax break. They were simply giving them back what was being taken from them through inflation and having taxpayers thrown into constantly higher tax brackets.
Right.
And that was put in the tax reform bill under Reagan almost as an afterthought. But it was really a revolutionary change.
Well,
and I'm amazed it's still around. It is around for the tax brackets, but it's right. not around for the alternative minimum tax.
Right. And according, I don't think you said this, Ken. You may have, but by 2010, over half of taxpayers who make between $75,000 and $100,000 a year
will be hit
with AMT. And that's the revolution you're anticipating, right?
That's right.
That's when the pitchforks and everything are going to be heading towards the White House and the Capitol building, right? Stand by, Ken Delecki. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with our good friend Ken Delecki, Deputy Managing Editor with the Kiplinger Editor. Stay with us. 20 after.
Give you my dog surprise.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. It comes on Sunday in the afternoon. Get you ready for the coming week ahead and hopefully give you some things to think about, some things to help you with your small business in lots of different areas. And the feature article, I should say, is going to be about healthcare, about association health plans. So you'll want to check that out if you're not familiar with AHPs, and if you're interested in them, you'll definitely want to pay attention to that. Ken Delecki is our guest. He's deputy managing editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Ken, what is the estimate of what it would cost? I know it's in the billions. Do we know what the number is of what it would cost to basically do away with AMT, alternative minimum tax?
Well, it depends. Depends when you do away with it, you know, because it's picking up more and more of the tab. But it will be in the billions. I mean, it'll be a huge number.
In the tens of billions.
Maybe
hundreds of billions.
I mean, every year, you know, it picks up more and more revenue. So it depends on precisely when they make the change.
And folks, if you're not familiar with the AMT, basically what it is, it's this parallel universe of taxation that's sort of lurking out there, and it's sort of like a tag team kind of thing. if the main tax wrestler doesn't throw you and pin you, you know, to the mat, if it misses you somehow, you know, then there's this tag team parallel universe, pardon the mixed metaphors, tax code out there that says, oh, we didn't quite get enough out of you. Here, you owe us some more money. You know, we missed you on the first swipe, so we're gonna, now that we've established you know, how much you didn't pay, you know, based on these rules that were created 35 years ago, and that basically don't apply anymore, we're gonna take another swipe at you. You owe us some more money. Now if you remove the sarcasm, Ken, isn't that about right?
That's about right. I mean, there's still some, you know, tax deductions that we can all take, no matter how much money we have. But again, the ATM is designed to capture some of that, so that very rich people can't totally escape taxes. That was the original idea, and you know, it has some sound basis, but without index. Becomes very distorted and does things it was never intended to do.
You know, Ken, I was in Washington, D.C., as you know, last week. I came by to see you for a few minutes with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and
right.
I moderated a panel of the Chamber's Small Business Summit, their 2004 Small Business Summit. We had several hundred small business owners in the room, and we had a system called the Meridia system, which is like the, you know, on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, when they ask the audience pushes a button and it tells them the answer, you know, their percentages. We had that kind of technology hooked up to everybody.
Uh-huh.
And I asked them this question. I went off the script a little bit, and I asked them this question when we talked about taxes. I said, would you like to see the tax code completely scrapped and redone with a whole new system? Yes or no? And about 85% of the attendees, as I remember, said yes.
I'm not surprised. The only problem with that, Tim, as I'm sure you know, is when you get down to the specifics, how do you replace it, and what do you replace it with? Are you willing to give up your home mortgage deduction?
Right.
For
right.
Example?
Yeah. Because when you go to a flat tax, that's the big sticking point, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. Deductions for charitable donations, for example,
mm-hmm.
is another one. And not only are taxpayers hesitant to give up those things, but of course there are tremendous constituencies behind those various deductions. Certainly, you know, obviously charitable organizations are going to fight to prevent that, the elimination of charitable deductions, the real estate industry on mortgage interest. And so, you have all these powerful groups that, including the taxpayers themselves, who've
right.
grown accustomed to these tax deductions.
But Ken, at what point does this tax system behemoth, just collapse under its own weight?
Well, we do think again, to get back to our lead in the Kiplinger letter this week, we do think the AMT is going to force a very serious overhaul, and whether it goes as far as replacing the whole tax system with a flat tax or a national sales tax, that's very debatable because of the you know, the very realistic problems you run into when you try to do that, but they're going to have to do something, and we think there'll be probably some significant changes in as I said, fewer brackets and deductions and streamlining some of the deductions we have now. Their hand's going to be forced on some of this.
Well,
as far as you know, doing what the delegates voted for there, you know, I don't know if you followed up on that, but if you'd asked them, are you willing to give up the your mortgage interest rate deduction?
Well, see, I didn't. I was in the room with them. I was physically there with them, and I didn't want to get hurt, so I didn't ask that. I didn't ask that question, Ken. Stand by. We're going to take a quick break. Self-preservation, folks, at all times. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with our good friend Ken Delecki, Deputy Managing Editor with the Kiplinger Editors, 29 After. The show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
now back to Ringside with the voice of small business and the champion of the entrepreneur.
Say it now, gentlemen. Undisputed heavyweight champion of the world.
The small business advocate, Jim Blasingame.
We're back. 34 after. Thanks for hanging around with me. It's my pleasure to be with you. If you just tuned in, welcome aboard. Ken Dalecki is our guest. He's deputy managing editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Ken, your website is kiplinger.com, K-I-P-L-I-N-G-E-R.com. And folks, I'm on that site right now, and it's pretty cool. Some of the headlines are Quicken gets a run for its money, and there's some stuff here about online brokers. There's investing information. There's current news. Lots of good stuff that anybody can log on to and take advantage of at kiplinger.com. But I also encourage you to check out their publications. Ken, the flagship. By the way, Ken, as you probably know, the Kiplinger Letter is 81 years old next week.
That's right. We're 81 years old.
81.
One of the oldest continuously published vehicles in the country.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think there are only two others as old.
That's the Kiplinger Letter. And which is every week, comes out every week by email and by regular mail. And by the way, Ken, next week in this slot, Austin Kiplinger is going to do the show. How about that?
Oh, great. That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
You're going to love that.
Yeah, he's a national treasure, isn't he, Ken?
Yes, he is. He's a terrific guy.
He's a national treasure, and I am so honored and so delighted. Folks, do not miss that interview. I mean, it's really cool when Ken Dalecki joins us, but it's way cool when Austin joins us, isn't it, Ken?
I concede that. Yeah.
You concede to that, won't you, Ken?
I sure do. He's lived a lot of history, and he's made some of it.
So oh, I'm telling you, folks, you're not going to want to miss this. He is the coolest guy. He's 85 years old, as I remember, 85 or 86. I'll have to ask him. He just had a birthday. So anyway, but then in addition to the Kiplinger Letter, they've also got three biweekly letters: the tax letter, the agriculture letter, and the California letter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then there's a magazine. You got that Kiplinger magazine, don't you?
Yes, Kiplinger Personal Finance Magazine, which is the main vehicle for the website that you cited, Kiplinger.com. We also have a website which you can get to through that website, specifically for the newsletter,
mm-hmm.
which is KiplingerForecast.com.
Right.
But either way, you can get to it. And you're right, that site has a lot of really good stuff for people trying to figure out where to get a good mortgage and all kinds of good information.
And they've got a 30-day free trial, too, folks, so take advantage of that. Ken, let's move over into page two and talk about human resources. You guys report that pay raises will average about 3.5% next year for most employees. Is that going to be about your number?
We look at that every year, you know, when we see that come out, and you need at least 2% to keep up with what we think inflation is going to be next
right.
year. So.
But you guys report that executives can expect a bit more. Now, is that a self-serving report there, Ken?
if I fall in that category, it is. It won't be a lot, probably under 4% there, but a little better than most employees.
You know, Ken, I was just visiting earlier in the day with Dr. Bill Dunkelberg, the chief economist for the NFIB, and he was pointing out, talking about human resources, he was pointing out that over the past 3 months, 55% of firms were hiring or attempting to hire.
Mm-hmm.
And he said 67, this is his survey that he conducts with small business owners, 66% of those trying to hire reported few or no qualified applicants.
Well, that's the problem with finding qualified applicants. That's been a problem for years now. I'm sure small business owners know it better than anybody.
Well, that's the challenge that we've got. We've got a lot of people unemployed, but they're not all ready for the 21st century jobs. That's the real conundrum right now with regard to America's human resources, isn't it,
yeah.
Ken?
And as you know, more and more training now is being done on the job rather than, people walking in the door being prepared to do the job.
Right, right. But, you know, Ken, this is where community colleges are really playing a great role in getting folks who used to work in plants and factories are now being retrained to work with computers, to use technology, to really be prepared to take advantage of these 21st century jobs. That's a great role the community colleges are playing, isn't it?
Oh, you're right. I mean, they're definitely in the forefront of that, and more resources are going to them, and they need them to do that job.
Another great
right.
thing,
and there, as you know, there are more and more cooperative agreements between various local development agencies and community colleges to provide the relevant training.
The Chambers of Commerce and the Industrial Development Organizations are working with the schools to make sure that they produce the kind of curriculum, that they offer the kind of curriculum that's effective for their jobs in that area.
Right.
You're exactly right. And we're going to talk about lots more things with our good friend Ken Dalecki, Deputy Managing Editor of the Kiplinger Editors, right after these messages. Stay with us, 22.
Love is strange. Lot of people.
We're back at 17 till. Little Mickey and Sylvia for you there, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, Bill Hubbard is one of our human resources expert. Actually, he is our human resources expert in the Brain Trust, and he's got some good things to talk to us about. Steve Martin is our profit expert. He's going to help us squeeze a little more profit out of our businesses. Hamilton Beasley is going to be joining us, and Hamilton is going to talk to us about how to gain and maintain some balance in our lives. And Rob Green is with the National Restaurant Association. And Ken Dalecki, Rob is going to talk to us about something you guys reported on this week that I didn't really want to get into today because we're going to do it tomorrow, and that is the overtime rules that really have become very controversial, haven't they?
Well, they have, and the House voted to strike them down. We don't think the House will prevail on this because, for one thing, the president will veto that if it ever gets to his desk.
But, you know, I asked the audience that I mentioned last week, today that I spoke with last week, what they knew about the overtime rules, and most of them didn't know much about it. And it's really a confusing and complicated and controversial issue. And I've asked Rob Green with the National Restaurant Association to join us and explain this to us once and for all. And so we're going to do that.
I'm going to listen in because it is complicated, as you say.
Well,
the general idea is to get more lower paid workers covered by overtime and fewer managers.
Exactly.
Then you get into a big issue of, well, what's a manager? You know, how do you define manager and all that business? So that'll be a good segment on that subject.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Ken, let's move down and talk about shipping. Freight rates are increasing faster than anticipated. What's up with that?
We knew they were going to go up, but not as fast as they are because there's such demand on our freight system that we think average rates for trucking will be up by 10% by spring, and that's on top of an 8 to 12% increase in the first half of this year.
Well, and this is just another extension of what I was talking about last hour with Bill Dunkelberg about fuel costs.
Yep.
You know, not only are our own fleets being the expense of operating our own fleets being impacted by the higher fuel prices, but so are the fleets of those people who ship the goods to us. And so it's understandable when gasoline prices have gone up the way they have.
And it's a combination of things too. You know, there's just a lot more trade. The economy is picking up, and so there's more shipping activity. Owners, store owners have changed some of their delivery schedules to cut down on inventory. So for the Christmas season, they want things shipped closer to the Christmas season, and that is going to cause some bottlenecks this year.
Yeah, absolutely. Ken, let's move on down and talk about insurance. This is a new wrinkle for automobile insurance that you guys are reporting this week. Tell us about that.
Yeah, some folks may have heard about this. The sensors that can record how far and fast and when you travel. There've been some concern about privacy issues on this, but insurance companies can use systems like that to determine whether you actually are a short distance driver. You drive slow. You don't drive during rush hours. And if that's the case, you can actually qualify for discounts.
If you elect to do this and you actually do drive the way you told them you drive,
right.
then you can qualify for some discounts.
Well, this is something in the works. Progressive Insurers Group is testing a device right now, and we expect that others will do the same.
The key is making sure that this technology, which is very useful, doesn't become something, some Big Brother kind of stuff. That's the key.
Yeah, well, that's
make sure it's elective, and that we don't have somebody looking over our shoulders.
Well, it obviously would be a voluntary thing, and as far as the insurers are concerned,
right.
And that's an interesting technology. And if you are on the right side of that, you can save some money.
Absolutely, Ken. Let's move over to page 3 and talk about the elections. In my memory, I don't remember any election being as any campaign process as we're having this year being as insipid and as unproductive in terms of the issues as this one has been. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do agree with you on that. We've been talking about people's war records and National Guard service instead of some of the really really big challenges that we have.
Well, the people who are pushing those stories have been more in the news cycle than have the candidates.
Well, I guess it's more entertaining to talk about some of those things, and of course it does say something about the candidates, but it doesn't say much about the issues.
Campaign finance reform hath wrought?
Yes, it is. It's exactly right, and it's something called the result of the growth of what are called 527s. And I worked years ago was editor of a newsletter about campaign finance reform, and I came to the conclusion that it's hopeless. The best you can do is get disclosure and just forget trying to control the flow of money in all these ways that the campaign reformers are trying to do, because you just can't do it.
Yeah.
And what's happened now is that the political parties have lost control of their own campaigns.
What election campaign finance reform hath wrought, ladies and gentlemen. And it's not pretty. It's not pretty at all. And there were some of us who were warning others about this before it was passed. Tintel, stay with us. We'll be right back with Ken Dalecki right after these messages.
One more thing.
We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Ken Dalecki, Deputy Managing Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Ken, congratulations on your 20th anniversary with Kiplinger.
Oh, thank you, Jim.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, that's your survivor. Is that what they call you there at Kiplinger now?
We have a group called the Survivors, and that's everyone who's been with the company 20 years or more. And we have a dinner every year. And tonight's the night.
So. All right. Well, have fun at that.
Well, thank you.
Tell all my friends there I said hello.
We'll do that.
Ken, let's move over to page 4 and talk about the economy. The expansion is settling in, as you say, into a moderate but steady pace. That's really healthy news, isn't it?
Well, it's good news, and we think that'll carry through next year with gross domestic product a growth of about 3.5% next year,
right?
And that won't feel boomy, but it's a good steady rate that's sustainable.
You know, Ken, when I was polling the small business owners last week at the U.S. Chamber, I asked them how they felt about the economy, if the economy was headed in the right direction or the wrong direction. And 72% said the economy was headed in the right direction.
Mm-hmm.
And 84% said they expected their business to be better next year than this year.
That's very typical, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
When you take polls like that, business folks think their particular business is going to do better than they might the overall economy, which is interesting.
Well, and remember this, small business owners are at a fully half of the U.S. economy.
Right.
So that's really good indication for the future, but it's not going to be enough to help the airlines, some of the legacy airlines, is it, Ken?
No, the big three big carriers are in trouble, as you know, United, U.S. Airways, and Delta, and they're very close to failure.
U.S. Just went into Chapter 11 for the second time in a couple of years.
Yeah,
they went in and came out, and now they're back in as of this week.
And that's a big trouble, not only for the direct employees of those companies, but also for their suppliers, and there are a lot of them, as you know.
Right.
And also it affects cities that are their hubs and where they're big employers, such as Chicago, Pittsburgh, Atlanta.
Right.
So it has widespread impact.
Well, and of all the things, of all the industries that were hit the hardest by 9/11, clearly the airline industry was.
And they're also hit by these higher fuel costs, as you noted earlier.
And there's little overcapacity. And they're having to compete with the non-legacy, the newer airlines that don't have all of the 20th century baggage or organizational baggage that these legacy carriers have.
You're right. They don't have the high pension liabilities. And that's the same kind of problem that the U.S. auto industry faces, too.
Yeah.
You know, competing against the Toyotas, which have virtually no retirees at all compared to GM, which has a huge retirement base to support from current operations. So.
Right.
It's a difficult challenge for them.
Another thing that you pointed out is that the healthcare industry is not cooling off. It's with baby boomers, our generation, Ken, you know, getting a day older every time the sun comes up. We're requiring, you know, more and more of us are requiring healthcare. I mean, there are 80 million of our generation, Ken.
And the upside of that, of course, is that the employment opportunities in that field are tremendous.
Especially registered nurses.
Yep.
There still aren't enough registered nurses. The last thing I remember seeing in the Kiplinger letters, I remember, was that we were way short of the RNs that we needed.
Yeah, we're way short, and ones like my wife are getting close to retirement, a lot of them.
Right,
and it's hard just to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll continue to also mine overseas, as you know. That's been a source of healthcare aids.
Right,
U.S. and there are more and more incentives coming out to get people to go into nursing.
Well, and also there's outsourcing of healthcare, some healthcare functions in other nations. Reading of X-rays and things like that are being done in other parts of the world as well. So, you know, and of course, some people see that as a good thing. Some people see it as a bad thing. I guess it just depends on which side of that you're affected. Ken, we're going to have to wrap it up. Thank you for being here. Good job today, as always. Thank you for sitting in for Joan. It's always
Thank
a pleasure
you,
and an honor to have you on our show.
Thanks a lot, Jim. Good to be with you.
Ken Dalecki, ladies and gentlemen, Deputy Managing Editor with the Kiplinger Editors. He'll be back another day, I promise. We won't let him get away too far. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program really is for you. I'll see you later.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.